Freedom song, freedom song. I got to sing my freedom song. I love my people, oh, I love us.
Looking for a holiday gift that gives back this season? Check out the new Ferguson Response Holiday Guide, a listing of verified gift ideas and donation links benefiting organizers and organizations working hard in the movement for Black Lives. Got that cousin who would love an Asada Taught Me hoodie, or that geeky sister that could use a Black Girls Code t-shirt? All that and more are included in the guide. How about that aunt who prefers to have donations made in her name? We have a long list of organizers to support, like Ryan Brown, a college senior who organizes on her campus as well as in her hometown of Cleveland, Ohio. Ryan was one of the protesters who interrupted Hillary Clinton this summer, demanding Secretary Clinton stop accepting campaign donations from the private prison industry. As a first-generation college student, Ryan is determined to get her degree while staying true to her principles. Wouldn't Aunt Denise love to know that she helped Ryan buy her school books this semester? Visit FergusonResponseHolidayGuide.com for all of your movement-minded gift-giving needs. Again, FergusonResponseHolidayGuide.com. And now let's get to the Interracial John podcast.
People Station and the system, BTI, love them because we love them.
So
them a call us pirates, them a call us illegal broadcasters. BTI try stop us, but they can't.
Welcome to Welcome to the Interracial John podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined, as always,
by a very white guy.
And you are very white indeed. What's going on, dude?
I apologize. I shouldn't fucks with you with that air horn, but I don't know why, but like, I think it was the show we were watching with a
Superstore?
We'll talk about that later. The one white wannabe rapper kid does like a really good like...
This is really good, though.
It's good. It's a good rap air horn. So I was on, like iTunes or something. I was like, oh, I should see if they've got like, you know, a rap air horn. And sure shit, they do. They have a rap air horn. And Smooth Mustache came over. I showed it to him. Right away, he puts it on.
You
and
guys,
then the two of us,
you
side
guys,
by side.
Sitting on my couch. I just baked them freshly baked caramel cookies and
shit
everything.
Shit was so wrong.
And for 10 minutes, back and forth. Todd. Sorry, Smooth Mustache turned on his light, turned his phone into a lightsaber. It was ridiculous.
It was like a childish reversion, like I don't know, like right. the number of years back, but like the like I don't know if it's a male thing, like a me and like my family kind of thing, but like all my brothers are the same way, like the like making noise for like trolling ass pointless like irritating noise like. That's like a hallmark. That's
just like, I think that's just white people.
That's a white dude thing?
Yeah.
Maybe right into his genres. Do other white dudes in your lives make pointless noise just to fucking make noise? And then like when the other person in the life's like, dude, just stop. And it's like six more times. And then you're like, oh, for Christ's sake, two more times after that?
Yeah. That's definite white privilege behavior right there.
Is that what it is?
Oh, yes. So
everybody wants to hear my air horn.
Yeah, everybody. Everybody does. If this is your first time joining us, you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. Or you can go to our website, interracialjohn.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, again, at Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. And we love feedback. You can leave us feedback a number of different ways. You can leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. If it's 5 stars, we'll read it here on the air, assuming it's not crazy. You can also email us at interracialjohn@gmail.com. Again, that's interracialjohn@gmail.com, and we'll read that on the air. And finally, and probably easiest, you can pick up your phone. You can do it right now. And dial 657-JOHNERS, that's 657-JAWNERS, and leave us a voicemail if it's under 3 minutes. And again, not crazy. We will play it here on the air.
Caveat's gotta be sanity.
Yes, must be sane. Shout out to Rod and Karen from The Black Guy Who Tips for our general feedback rules. And do we have a review this week?
We do.
Don't fuck it up.
The rhythm's in my strong suit. broccoli.
Five star review now.
We should do more of that song someday. Just the guitar there.
It goes hard.
It does. So
gotta
five star review.
Gotta fly now.
The title of this review is Chemistry. And it's by Susie 6.5.
Oh.
Thank you, Susie 6.5. Susie says, I love the chemistry between Leslie and Drew. He's so white, but adorably so. I'm going to change that to my Abby name. Adorably white guy.
Adorably.
Yeah, maybe that's reaching.
Very white, but adorably so. I like it.
You know, and I shouldn't.
In the middle, tattoo
we should
on your stomach.
Finish the review. But for longtime listeners might know that the first time Leslie and I, we just started dating. And there was a like, you know, all right, I'm going to introduce like. Said very white guy to all my friends, but, you know, most of them black. And there was an individual that night that, like, at the end of the evening, like, that, like, quiet silence, like, you've had your couple of drinks and you've had your meal and maybe desserts, like,
yeah.
You know, and just kind of, you know, and he became like, you know what, Drew, man, you are, like, really, like, the whitest guy ever, but you're pretty cool. And I was like, all right, I'll take it. You know, I'll take it. So
we stick to that to this day.
That was 15, 17 years ago.
Yep.
I suppose that's still true. I love the chemistry between Leslie and Drew. He's so white, but adorably so. I guess there's something about married people that makes for good convo. I love the content and the passion in which Leslie throws those F-bombs. That's how I know it's getting real. Hey, Drew, when will you do another White Privilege podcast episode?
Oh.
I like that one, too. Can you tell me what the name of the theme songs for IRJ and the WPB podcast were? Thanks. Keep up the good work. Just call me list number 14. Thank you.
So our theme song is by Coco T, T-E-A, and it's called Pirates Anthem. It's actually a dancehall story song about a time in Jamaica where there were only four radio stations, and so if you wanted to get like dance hall and stuff like that on the radio, they had these pirate radio stations that the government was constantly trying to shut down.
Right, so this was the I switched it, but this eventually became, I guess, the theme music for the White Privilege podcast, and it's Ben Harper, Call It What It Is Murder.
They shot him in the back.
That was a good show, Drew.
I should do it.
You should do it again.
And I know Sean would.
When it gets vandalized. You think he would?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you should totally do it again.
So call it what it is, call it what it is, call it what it is. Murder.
So what was the other question? Oh, so you said, when am I going to do another one? You know, we fell victim to the podcast curse. And I made a comment on the AUA Hope about the magic number 8. I don't know if Ricky caught it, but that's actually the number 8 is the number of
it's
podcasts.
It's 10, I think.
No, it's 8.
Was it 8? I thought it was 10.
We did 8 episodes. And that's the average number that podcasts do before they fall.
No, I was pretty sure once you get past 10, you're like 90%, you'll continue going.
Okay.
For at least a year.
Well, I think that might be the cutoff of like number of percentages, but the average is 8. Number of podcasts that fail, they usually get 8 out, and that's all, or, you know, 8 episodes and you're done kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's
it's
what we did.
It's a lot of work.
You know, and it was a time commitment, and I just, I don't know. And maybe it's, I had to do all the production stuff. And all the post editing, and I don't do any of that for our show, and that's why it's successful.
That might have been part of it.
I'll definitely say
that. I also think that there was a little bit of, like, in terms of content, I feel like a bunch of white dudes talking about racism, like, a year ago was a little bit, I don't know. I could tell you guys were really trying to, like, do more, and then you started thinking, like, what good is this doing? So, but I feel like now there's a lot of stuff. A lot of meat out there for you to really start digging into with people.
I think there is more we could definitely do.
So,
part of it was the production.
We talked a little bit about the structure that you guys needed to put a little more consistent.
And that's
structure.
Again part of the production stuff that I don't like to do.
Yeah.
It's the reason that John is so successful that I don't touch that shit with the
so
10-foot
successful.
Computer cable.
So consistent.
She's list number 14. Susie 6.5.
Right,
the Baker's
Susie.
Dozen is now 14. She's list number 14.
Okay.
Thank you for the.
Thanks for that. We appreciate the review. And again, get on it, all you other 12 people that haven't written your reviews yet. Do it. Oh, I'm going to give a shout out to Michelina because she listened to the show. She started listening to it.
I meant to say, I should shout out Anastasia and I recorded an episode of the White Privilege Podcast, and I never even produced it.
So you have one in
the
can.
Yeah, literally have one, like, recorded, sitting around, and never bothered to edit it, produce it, put it out. I'm fucking awful. And I apologize, Anastasia.
She don't listen to this if you did that to her. just letting you know, I wouldn't. Anyways.
Deservedly, ouch.
Yeah, deservedly. So you went to the grocery store randomly the other day to pick up a few things?
I guess maybe it's like new to me, new to Michigan. Like, I'm just used to, like...
We've been spoiled.
Very spoiled.
In Jersey, it's all about convenience of people.
Well, and not just convenience. There's a grocery store chain called Wegmans that, if y'all don't have it out where you're at, Wegmans is the fucking bomb.com. It's perennially one of the top 50 places to work. It's a privately held grocery store chain. They do all their own products. Like, you can get like Rice-A-Roni, or you can get like Wegmans-A-Roni. And like, typically Wegmans-A-Roni is a buck cheaper and 10 times better, right? So like, it's a really good grocery store. And they've got all the like Whole Foods type packaged stuff, and gluten this and that, and bulk food and organic. And they just, it's like one of the most kick-ass grocery stores ever. And they do self-checkout better than anyone I've ever seen. Like, they kept doing more and more self-checkout. And then they had someone, like, in the middle of a self-checkout, like, if there was, like, four checkouts together, they had a person with a price gun, and they could come and just, like, you know, you didn't have to go, oh, I need help. They were, like, right there doing the shit you needed. Like, it moved quick. And people got educated, and it ran out, right? So fast forward to here, Grand Rapids. We're in Meijer's territory, M-E-I-J-E-R, Frederick Meijer. And we shop at the original Meijer's, the one from like 60-some-odd years ago. And, for fuck's sake. You know, I guess like to some degree it's like, quote unquote, the hood Meijer's, you know?
It is.
But, oh, for
God bless our hood.
Jesus H. Christ, kill me now. It's just excruciating. It's just like the only time to go in and not be like in pain, I guess, is like 2 a.m. And even then they'll have like one register open. So it's like, even like, all right, I'm going to only have 6 people here at 2 a.m. We're all checking out in the same fucking place. Give me a fucking break. And the way they do self-checkout, oh, is it fucking painful? So painful. They have like 12 limit only, and then they have like unlimited self-checkout. And it was 4 p.m. I was like, Jesus, look at the line here. I might have waited 15 minutes to check out. It took me longer to check out than it did to like drive there and shop and shit. It was unbelievable. And I just was so mad with this one. I shouldn't be like ages and mean, but this little white lady, and fucking, she must have had a bunch of cats, and she was buying like, again, self-checkout, no limit. I had like 62 fucking, like the little like tuna cans of cat food. You know what I'm talking about? Like little like Friskies. And you know that thing, that the self-checkout's not like, you don't fly through.
No, it's like boop, bloop, bloop, bloop.
And then she'd have to like look at the thing, make sure it rang up right, and then set it down on the belt, and then get another can, bloop. It was just painful. And then Meijer's has this like coupon thing, which I can't seem to fucking
figure out for the
life
of you.
I'm not a Luddite technophile. I'm not like an idiot. But like the way they've done it from a business standpoint, perfect sense. You sign up for their app, M-Perks, and then you get your store and your flyer and your circular, and you can like clip the coupons. But you have to actually clip the coupon in the app. You have to like on your computer, on the phone, go bloop, I want this coupon. And then when you go, you like log in with your M-Perks and your password and everything, it knows the coupons you've already clipped, but you had to have done it before you scan the item. So from their perspective, it guarantees like there's no failure. Like the cashier can't cheat and take a coupon for something you did not buy, because it's like tied into the POS like cashier system, right? Like your coupon and then the shit you scan, if it's there, you got it. If not, you didn't get it. So like one, they probably save a lot of like hassle and like collecting physical coupons and doing that horse shit. And they can probably go directly to the, you know, Kellogg or the you know, Procter Gamble, whoever the coupon was for. They can do certain things. So it makes a lot of sense, but it's a hassle. You gotta like clip coupons on your phone, like before you go fucking buy shit. And then half the time doesn't work. Like they have these complicated coupons. It's like buy $25 worth of these select goods and get a $5 off coupon the next time you come into shop. It's like, where's my fucking coupon? It's just, I'm not here for Meijer's, and I'm hoping the Fresh Time, is that what we're opening up?
Fresh Time Market, yeah.
Yeah, I'm hoping Fresh Time Market.
I have hopes. It looked promising when I went to their website and such.
Yeah, so speaking of groceries, you make me drive like out of town to get your drinks,
fuck
your beverages.
Fuck you, it's not out of town.
It's
on the other side of town.
There's like 12 grocery stores
but
between
here. But this grocery store has the good drinks I like. You know, anybody who knows me and who's ever visited me or knows me personally knows I take my beverages
listen,
very seriously.
You don't drink water. You don't drink alcohol. You drink fucking beverages.
I like a variety of
Italian sodas and shit. I'm with you.
Fizzy beverages and not like Coke and bullshit like that. I need special shit.
I got you. And so there's so many places we get it. And you had, we just went, you had an assortment of stuff.
and, of stuff.
My boy's over, and you're like, anything you want, you know, whatever you want. What do you want? I'm just going to reach in the fridge, and I'll grab anything you want. And you pull it out, and you go, oh, it's blueberry, my favorite. Wait, you can't have that.
I said, oh, blueberry. Yeah, but you can't have that, because that's my favorite one.
It just cracked me up.
Pomegranate.
You can have anything you want, whatever you want. I'm going to freak you and just get you whatever you want. Oh, wait, it's blueberry. It's my favorite. You can't have that.
Yeah.
So I guess we're going to talk a little bit about like Twitter beefs. Like it's these Twitter streets have been kind of wild and
out there
over the weekend, 48 hours or so.
Keyboard's been hot.
Yeah. And I don't want to get personally into the larger discussion. I'll just use his name, Sean King. There was some, you know, kind of back and forth specifically with Dre and Netta. And two observations. Again, I'm not, you and I have talked a little bit about Sean on the show and, you know, our kind of experiences with Justice That's All before, you know, a year ago. But I felt like there was definitely a whole lot of individuals that were either like holding their tongue or quiet. And I might even point the finger at myself until Dre and Netta sort of opened up on Sean. Like once like the two of them were like, oh really? Okay. You're going to come in a sideways. We're going to now, you know, blah, 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 blah. And it was like, gave Twitter permission to really speak out against Sean King in a different way. And so that was one observation. And then two, I guess overnight, sometime today, this morning, there was a tweet about Netta that was very problematic, and he deleted it right away. But a bunch of people, of course, screen capped it. And I guess Sean's deleted his entire Twitter history. Like, he now has like 800 tweets, right? Like, he's deleted, like, I guess everything. And I struggle with that. I find that a very odd move and reaction. I find it the opposite of transparent and accountable. I personally, as a policy, I when I say I don't delete anything, I wear my mistakes, not proudly, of course, but if I've offended someone and I ask them specifically, I've done this, I've hurt you, I acknowledge that. Would you like me to acknowledge that publicly? Would you like me to delete the tweet and hope it goes away? What do you want as the aggrieved party? Much less deleted my entire Twitter history, which is, again, it seems, I don't want to say suspicious, but doesn't it make you seem like...
It just clearly is how you put it well about the accountability piece, because just what it says to me is that it's a complete lack of desire for accountability. And that's what it signals. That's what it indicates. That's what it says. It's like, and it also signifies that I'm done talking about this. Like,
and it could, I'm not trying to like play devil's advocate, but maybe there's something with work, and you know, maybe the Times is like, listen, you got to fucking, you know, we... blah, 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 skibbity boo boo. Who fucking knows what? I don't know. There could be some rationale, but it looks, you know, again, yeah, intent doesn't matter.
Yeah, but even in that scenario, you would just be deleting, like, the things surrounding this incident, not your entire Twitter history.
Yeah.
Like, there's no situation except for his feelings that were employed in this decision.
And
so,
in the melee, you know, I think you and I had discussed with some other folks that it became difficult for legitimate critique, you know, maybe the JTA folks, because it got either co-opted or conflated with like bigotist, like slander. You know what I'm saying? Like there was a bunch of just like, fuck Sean King, you know, he's an asshole, fuck him, fuck him, fuck him. Racist invective that kind of like consumed any sort of like rational, critical critique of Sean and whatever was going on. And I don't know exactly where I'm going with it, but
I'll tell you where I'm fucking going with it. I said lots of shit about this motherfucker before. I've said it to people personally. I've said it on Twitter. I've said it plenty of places about my personal experiences and thoughts and just general uneasiness and untrustworthiness of this individual. And I was pretty much met with a meh. He seems all right to me. Meh. His stories are good. Meh. But let Dre and Netta come say some shit about him. And now...
But that was my observation.
Everybody's ready to throw down and come after Sean King.
That was my observation.
And I'm not saying, you know, whatever went down between the three of them is their business. And I don't really give a shit to talk about all that. It was messy and it was very public. And it was, you know, I would say a long time coming, clearly, like just in terms of the responses that I saw, not necessarily that interaction, but people's, you know, kind of other people's reactions to it. But I just personally, just as me, found it interesting, you know, but whatever. That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah. Again, the deleting is just, is strange to me, and I don't know why. Because I thought there were other, like, you know, like it seemed like he was aware of his mistakes, you know, in terms of communications and various things. And it's like, okay, I'm going to refund monies, like from, you know, the collections he had done for JT and stuff. And it was like, okay, like, I don't want to say like he could have, quote unquote, come back from
Listen,
that in this
if
space.
I will tell you right now that I have in the last, since that Justice Together letter come out, have had no less than 15 reporters contact me directly to ask me for a comment or ask me to talk about my experiences with Sean, et cetera, et cetera. One did it yesterday. So it's interesting to me, but it's not that surprising either. So, but that's that, like I said, that's all I have
I'll
to
be
say.
Right back.
I hear you. So there was another, I guess, Twitter beef. I don't know if that's the right word for this
Twitter
one.
Twitter beef. Twitter maybe. Bullshit.
Yeah. Well, I know you've got some history. So, and I'm not trying to shy away from it. She's public. She doesn't hide her account. Her name's Amy Steven. And she had some tweets that I think maybe got misconstrued. I'm not sure exactly what the going back in the genesis, the tipping point of where things went really sideways, or it could have been kind of maybe like, still saved, I don't know. But the crux of it is she was espousing some, you know, views about the divisiveness that you know, race plays, and that those that want to leverage race in a negative way, you know, the sort of like oligarchy 1% uses race to pit us against one another, and was trying to, you know, and again, I don't want to put words in her mouth. You can look at her timeline. Talk about, you know, having to understand a conservative and entertain a conservative's viewpoint, and to look at a conservative individual, a GOP, a Trump supporter, as a human being, and to really try to find some common middle ground. And I don't know, again, where, because I didn't see all the back and forth, but somewhere around there, it kind of like, you get a little sideways construed of like, well, I'm gonna sit down at the table and find common ground with a KKK Klansman,
right?
And she denies that. Just that, you know, I was talking about conservatives and politics only. Nevertheless, again, I don't know exactly where things went kind of sideways, but there was
went sideways with her talking down to black folks, trying to act like she knows shit.
I'm not done talking. Oh, I'm sideways with
that's where it went sideways. Well, like you want to know where it went sideways?
Well, like I said, there was a response from more than a few black folk that were, you know, I think understandably taking umbrage with that sort of, you know, like, hey, why are you giving seat at a table for somebody that fucking hates my guts and wants to see me dead and doesn't think of me as even human? Why do we need to entertain that person at all? And I'll let you say the response to that, because I think you have a better, you know, I'm as a white person might have an opinion of what that response looked like.
What response?
To black folk that were kind of trying to check her.
Her response was to try and lecture them. Oh, this is how we're going to get it together. Oh, trying to talk about this is how political processes work. You have to talk with people on the other side and this, that, the other thing. Saying a bunch of shit to black people that they already know is condescending as fuck. Responding to black people when they're calling you out on your bullshit with said condescending posts is extra fucked up. And thirdly, you would think that after six fucking black people say the same shit to you, like, nah, this is fucked up and here's why. Because most of the people that talked to her in the first place were not rude at all. They were just like, yeah, but you're talking about having civil conversations with people who deny my humanity. And I don't see how you can be an ally and think that's something that's okay to do. And also to have you espousing it out here as some sort of strategy to move things forward, quote unquote, is fucking bullshit. She's done this before. She'll do it again. She's problematic as fuck. I told you before, I don't like her. I don't like the way she talks to black people on Twitter. I don't like the way she thinks she's so fucking in and all about people. I don't like any of it. So what happened?
Well, so now here's where you and I think there's a point of conversation for me, right? So, you know, on some level, it's like, okay, Amy, why are you trying to entertain these people that, you know, there's no reason to entertain them? And I kind of feel as a white person, part of my, I don't say like responsibility, duty, whatever you want to call it, I don't know, is to help folks and to work with, and I see calling in folks. And, you know, so I'm seeing this, it happened on my timeline pretty late last night, and got up this morning and was like, oh man, this still isn't, you know, this isn't going away. And you tagged something specifically at me. It was like, hey, look, this is a pretty good example of what is, you know, encapsulates the issue right here. And I read it and exactly what you said, the response and kind of the thing. So I said, you know, and I before I could respond, she was like, what is this? You know, what's going on? You know, question mark. And I was like,
what she said was, did I miss something? Bitch, yes, you did. Okay, you fucking missed something. How about that?
I'm code switching. You're giving it.
That's what she said.
You're giving it the black woman's righteous indignation. I'm going to give it the white.
I'll punch it right up for you. That's what I'll fucking do.
Give it the white kid gloves.
Punch up. That's what I'll do.
So I was like, I'd like to DM. And I don't know if I would say this to her credit, but, you know, she did not feel the need. Not need. She goes, hey, let's, you know, I'd rather talk here publicly. You know, she's in terms of visibility. I don't know about accountability. What's the word I'm looking for? Maybe
ego, because that's what that is.
Well, I use that. I'll say and do things publicly specifically for me. As a layer of accountability. Like, I'm not saying some twisted, fucked up shit like behind closed doors. I'm going to say what I'm saying. You know what I mean? But anyway, so she goes, you know, she'd rather say it, have this type of conversation here publicly. And I did. I kind of was like, listen, I think I understand what you're attempting to do, but I also think that it's been, you know, misconstrued and a lot of black folk are taken, you know, umbrage, understandably, with the position you've espoused. And I sent her the Bernard Hess, 8 stages of white racial identity. So as white people, we're not often, if ever, asked what it is to be white as a race. You know, what do we have in common? What does that mean? You know, locally, colloquially, like what shared identities are there as a white person? And no one even really studies that shit because, like, you know, why would they? Like, that's just the dominant normative culture. So Bernard Hess has this list, 8 stages, and they're not only an exclusive, just kind of the predominant ways of being as a white person. And you can occupy more than one of these stages at a time, and you can bounce up and down from them. But it basically goes from like white supremacist to abolitionist, right? And white supremacist is like the worst. And then like after that, it's like someone slightly better than a white supremacist. And my comment was that I just don't think there's, in my opinion, any benefit, value, or merit in understanding or having a dialogue or inviting people that are, you know, level 1 and 2 on Bernard stages of white identity, white supremacists, at the table. I don't think it does any good. And quite frankly, I think it's causing some discomfort to folks around here on Twitter, black folk. It's just not, you know, I said, I think my exact phrase was, if multiple black folk are coming to me saying this is causing a problem, that gives me cause to pause. And that was kind of my statement. It's like, let's, you know, think about it for a little bit, what that means, that position. And instantly I was like, okay, yeah, I think she heard me, which is good. But
she didn't hear shit. I'm still reading her tweet right now.
Yeah. What I don't say bothered me, and I haven't found a solution for this, is that oftentimes, so look at the response multiple black people got. I didn't read all of them, but you said we're coming in the same very polite kind of like, hey, this isn't correct kind of way. They got one type of defensive response, whereas white guy got, you know, okay, you know, I'll give that some thought.
Mm-hmm.
So Twitter beefs, I don't know. I don't say don't be doing them, but these Twitter streets. And I, again, so for me, I had to come back to with Amy, at what point does wanting to help her out, because I know her. I'm not saying we're friends, but we've spoken on the phone. I kind of know her, you know, for some period of time now. You know, I've said as white people, we really shouldn't be writing other white people off. That's kind of the worst thing we can do, is like, oh, fuck you, you white piece of shit. I'm never talking to you again. Like that, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, we were like all of our friends that said racist shit, we said goodbye to forever. A, we wouldn't have any friends, and B, we wouldn't really get anywhere. Like, that's not kind of like the solution, right? Like the whole like calling in versus calling out kind of thing. But at what point does my interest and desire in maintaining a relationship with her begin to, I don't say do harm, but like you've expressed your opinion, right? And now I'm saying, you know, I feel somewhat obligated to maintain in a dialogue and see if I can't, you know, work with her to understand some of the stuff that's problematic and why it was problematic and so forth and so on. Like, does that inherently bother you?
What, you? No, I don't give a shit. That's you.
You don't give a shit. Okay. But like, you know, isn't there a, I don't want to say, is there any negative in, you know, trying to work with somebody that, you know, and I don't think of like, Amy's not a good example. Like I've stayed in relationship with much more problematic people that are doing a lot less than she is. You know what I'm saying? So, but I don't know. I feel, because there were some people on my timeline that were kind of like, you know, fucking, why are you kid gloving it with her? You know, they had some even angrier vective than you did. And I felt kind of, I don't say conflicted, but, you know, I don't want to just write her off, but I also don't want to just sit here and quietly accept her.
Yeah, I mean, you can do whatever you want to do. My problem is that the second layer to this is her complete disregard for black people. And then her response to the fact that black people are feeling this is that she then plays the victim, where she puts tweets out like, marker tweet for the date and time people told me this would happen if I unblock conservatives and try to understand their point of view. That's fucking shady as shit. That's not how allies act. And her inability to understand the hurt that people have and her disregard for it is gross. And listen, everybody can have, we all could be in the room, but not everybody's invited to sit at this table. Yeah. If that makes any sense. And that's how I feel about it. I just feel that's how I feel about it. You know, and I guarantee you what's going to happen is someone's going to say it in some nice lovey-dovey bullshit-ass language, like, you hurt my feelings and my soul and it made me feel really sad. And then she's going to be like, oh, this matters to me. This, I understand now. And you know what? That's violence against black people as well, because it shouldn't take us genuflecting and showing our scars and our harm and our sadness to you in order for you to believe us when we tell you something. And that's where my other problem comes in. So
and there was another individual that we've spoken about privately that I won't name, that, you know, does sometimes good, gets the cookies, right? You know, gets the pat on the back for, like, you know, being white and speaking out against shit. But I'll say this, I've had to, in my own usage of Twitter, try to really understand why and what I'm doing and when I'm doing it, and like, who's this for? And if it's for me, like, what's the purpose? Like, and there's, you know, there's a lot of that kind of, like, I don't want to say for me, but like, call it like performative allyship, right? Where, like, you know, again, I'm guilty of this. And I think a lot of white folks that are, especially on Twitter, because it's easy to get those performative ally cookies on Twitter. You get followers and likes and retweets. That's how it works, right? And, you know, I've known a few folks in the space that it's weird. Maybe, and I find it more with folks that don't have a on-the-ground connection, right? When you're doing shit on the ground and you're doing this work and you're seeing people and you're talking to, you know, moms of kids that have been killed, when you're marching with Tanya Brown saying, who killed my son, there's a level of, I don't know, gravitas that you just don't, you kind of hold on to a little bit differently.
Yeah, because the thing is, she's coming at it from this analytical position.
And that's part of the performative
thing. And it's like, yeah, but we're not talking about analytical situations. You're talking about policy and we're talking about life and death situations. You're talking about finding middle ground, and I'm talking about my fucking humanity.
Well, and so I think, and this is a, again, I'm going like third tangent. We gotta get to the actual news. But remember, I said there was like a, almost like a chart of like, so if Berner's got the white stages of racial identity, I do think there's like a growth chart, like the Erickson's developmental stages of an infant. There's like a growth chart of like,
of what, anti-racist white people. You should put that together. I'll put a pin in that, because that'll be like the perfect relaunch for the white people's podcast. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, so there is like a growth stages, and I think for me, and I like to use me in my own growth, so I shouldn't maybe generalize to everybody. But there definitely was a point where there was like, you're almost like occluded by anger. You're just so fucking pissed and upset that it's all anger. It's all emotion.
Well, and I think when it happened to you, I remember like looking at you in the face and saying something to the effect of, listen, I know that for your entire life up until now, whenever something's bothered you, you've been able to just like, Shazam. I fucking fixed
mad white
shit.
Guy. Boom.
It's fixed. And now you're confronted with something that's like, yeah, we don't agree with you, so the system's fighting against you. And it's such a foreign feeling that, to me, that's a milestone.
Yeah, but that's one of the developmental stages.
Yeah, for sure.
And I would say that the reaction is, when you become, so like there's different, like there's a stage where you become aware enough that you shouldn't be sucking all the air out the room as a white person centering yourself, that you shut the fuck up. But then you shut yourself up so much that you're like silent at the wrong time. Like you educate yourself into silence. And there's a developmental stage where the anger, the emotional component is just like, it you realize not that it's worthless, but you realize that it's not doing any good being on 11 all the time like that. Like there's a time and a place right, for that
because,
emotion.
Because in reality, like indignation without the righteousness is just stupid. Well, that's what it is.
And maybe that's what white people have.
Indignation without righteousness. And when you're just indignant, like you just look like a fool out in these streets, like dumb. And that's what this shit is. Like, what are you so upset about? On the real, what are you so upset about? I want to know. Tell me.
I'm mad about slavery.
But I'm saying, though, you hear you understand what I'm trying.
No, I do.
At.
I do.
That's the missing component. And y'all, that's why you see white folks all the time, like just dying to be the victim, because then they get the righteousness. Once they're the victim, then they get the righteousness, and now they can be as indignant as they want.
The name of this episode, Unrighteous Indignation.
Yes, that's it. I'm going to write it down.
Unrighteous a word? I just fucking...
coined it?
Portmanteau.
Portmanteaued it.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's get on with this.
Unrighteous indignation.
The news is coming on. The news is coming on.
So, Serena Williams, let's give a... we need an applause meter.
Clap, 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 clap.
Sportsperson.
Sportsperson of the year. Sportsperson
of the year. And I don't even really, there's nothing really to talk about. She fucking kicked ass. We all know that the Grand Slam did not quite happen, but had a Serena Slam. When you win the shit that's named after you, right? Like, you've had a fucking year. But
look, let's keep it real. She was 53-3 this year.
Yeah.
53-3.
So there were a few other nominations, and Sports Illustrated would talk about these nominations each week leading up to this week when they announced the sports person and her. And one of them was American Pharoah, the horse, right? That was one of the candidates. And Sports Illustrated had the case for, and it was all this like, you know, first fucking triple crown winner and blah, blah, skibbity boo boo. But let's start with, it's not a person. The award's called Sports Person of the Year. Two, who wins? The horse, the jockey, the trainer? What? Like, that's the dumbest thing ever. But so people got... I shouldn't say got.
What about people?
White people.
Thank you.
Let's
correct yourself.
White people there. White people let the fucking racism flag fly. As soon as Sports Illustrated announced it, there was a tweet from and a poll from, like, you know, American Racing Forum, you know, who would you rather as
who is the who is the real sports person?
Yeah,
that's what the language was. Who's the real sports person?
And it was all like, you know, Pharoah won triple crown. She didn't even win the Grand Slam. But then the age old trope, black people compared to animals, kind of thing, just really got off into an ugly way with memes and people. And I just was fucking like, you know, fucking people can't just black excellence is not the fucking like. Why? Anytime there's anything black that gets lifted up, just white racists fucking get so fucking out of pocket.
Yeah, they do.
And the fucking horse.
A horse.
A fucking horse.
Really?
American Pharoah. I mean, people are like, who would you rather fuck? And like, more people are voting for American Pharoah. Like, come on. You don't see that as the most racist fucking thing you ever fucking done? Fuck you, man.
It's gross.
There was a tweet from an editor at Maxim magazine that had some sort of poll like that you retweeted. And I saw it. And I engaged, and I again kind of did my little. the news is coming. That's it goes on. Zoe's like, I'm 11 the bell. I put my kid gloves on. I was like, yeah, you don't see this as problematic. There's a history of comparative inappropriate comparativeness with black people and animals. This really is, you shouldn't have done this. And came back with, well, it was a joke. I was trying to show it and highlight. And someone else, I'll have to give a shout out to, I think it was Margaret, had quite a long conversation. And at the end of it, he's like, you know, I see, you know, I'm totally sorry. I'll delete it. And he did. So I guess kudos for knowing better and doing better. I'm not sure I believe that it was meant to be sarcastic until it was like super insulting. I tweeted something like, you know, your intent is irrelevant. The outcome is that it was really insulting to a lot of people. You know, kudos to you for recognizing that and deleting it.
Right.
But still, it's like, fuck, Jesus. Like, I'm with Karen Hunter on this one. Can we just, 2016, forever and ever, make zero analogies, similes, or comparisons with black anything and animals. Just don't.
Just don't.
It
do
just
it.
Never is never a good look. It can't be a good look. No. It's not a good look. Just don't do it.
It's a terrible look.
Yeah. So kudos to Serena. And there was another, I don't know her name, but so the potential nominees, the sports people that didn't win, one of them was a young black woman, a gymnast. Again, I can't remember her name, that literally won every event she went to this
year.
Yeah,
Billy. Her last name is Billy.
It just didn't have the Olympics. Simone. Right? So, you know, gymnasts only get shine every 4 years.
Yeah.
So she won. This is her third world championship in a row.
She's about to kill them in Brazil.
She got every gold medal she went after.
She's the most decorated female gymnast in history. She's about to kill them in Brazil.
She won the most recent worlds all around by the single largest margin
ever in the history.
And the margin was so great that, like, I forget what it was, but, like, you know, these things are decided like by like 0.2 and 1.8. She won by like fucking 60 ass points. Like, the second and third place weren't even fucking close. Like, second and third place almost didn't add up to the score she had.
Correct.
So this is someone who didn't win
yeah.
Sports Person of the Year. Yeah. And you fucking bitching about a horse?
You got the problems?
Here's another one of those, we need to be fucking street casting your side eye. Like, that's that baby eye right there when you're in the crib. You done had that look since you were 8 months old.
That's a Remy eye. That's a Remy eye. That's what that is.
Speaking of animals.
Yeah. No, I was still talking about Serena real quick.
Oh, sorry.
So one of the things that happened is she went back to Indian Hills this year.
Right.
Just putting context, just like her year, truly putting it in context, like, you know, a place where she was racially booed out loud by an entire stadium, and she hadn't been back there since.
In case anybody forgot, her and her sister were in the tournament. They had a seating that was such that they would have met each other prior to the finals. And Venus dropped out, and they accused Serena and her father and the whole, you know, Williams family of manipulating the rankings and the playings. And
Indian Wells,
So forth and so forth. Yeah, like the Indian Wells tournament folks. And again, this is what, like, you know, how does this shit happen? The folks in the stands didn't just decide to boo.
Correct.
There was a narrative in the press that the Indian Wells committee, team, organizers, because they were hurt. Their feelings were hurt. They had a lot of money in this, and they wanted to see the Williams sisters, and they wanted to see the Williams sisters play because that would have been a big draw, and that didn't happen. And in their hurt, they lashed out at her, and they opened up the door for people to be racist as fuck. And, I mean, she got called the N-word. For her to go back, and she said, I will never go back. I'll never go back. And they apologized in, like, you know, only like as the world number one ranking female tennis player for the last 7 years that has skipped your tournament can. They apologized years ago. And when she came back to me, I was fucking like a boss. I mean, like a boss. I don't know what her statement was, but it was like, it wasn't going to allow them to gloss over this. She was like, yeah, you did this. And, you know, I'm coming
back.
I'll
read a statement from her. She says, I walked out onto the court. The crowd immediately started jeering and booing. In my last match, the semifinals, I was set to play my sister, but Venus had tendonitis and had to pull out. Apparently, that angered many fans. Throughout my whole career, integrity has been everything to me. It is also everything and more to Venus. The false allegations that our matches were fixed hurt, cut, and ripped us into us deep. The undercurrent of racism was painful, confusing, and unfair. In a game I loved with all my heart, at one of my most cherished tournaments, I suddenly felt unwelcome, alone, and afraid.
And she went fucking back to that fucker.
Yep.
Like, literally, head held high, world number one, and scorched the fucking tournament and took that fucking prize money, right? So she didn't just have a year, man.
So anyways, kudos to you, Queen Serena, and may you reign long and supreme.
Hear, hear.
And fuck that horse.
Fuck that horse.
Not literally, though. So Tennessee.
He's going to be fucking a lot of things. He's going to have like a $600,000 stud fee.
Yeah. And that deserves some award, right? Anyways. Tennessee becomes the first state ever to create an animal abuse registry.
Oh, like a child predator.
Good news, animal lovers. Good news. By January of next year, Tennessee will be the first ever state in the nation to launch a statewide registry for convicted animal abusers. The registry can be seen by the public and can be viewed online. It was May of this year when the Tennessee Animal Abuser Registration Act was officially passed. So those who are convicted of any animal abuse will have his or her name and photo recorded and posted for the public to see. So, yeah.
Well, animals.
They hope other states will follow. I find it interesting.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I think there's even, I'm not saying there's like, I don't know, but I assume that there are opponents to sex registry listings. Like, there's like some is it constitutional giving someone the red badge of, you know, offender in this registry for life? And then there are, you know, pretty, the laws are such that, like, you know, I'm on the registry because I raped 12 people, or I'm on the registry because I, you know, inadvertently expose myself to a youngster. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's, you're on the registry.
The degrees.
Yeah.
Whatever.
You don't hear what the person did. So I know that there are people that think that the registry is not good. But it,
I don't know those people, but whatever.
It just, you know, but I don't understand what having someone on an animal abuse registry does. Like, what,
I guess it would potentially stop them from being able to, like, legally adopt an animal. So that would be one thing, but I find it interesting.
Are animal abusers adopting animals?
We can't even get states to count the number of black people that they kill.
That's the first thing I thought. Is that, but no, despite a federal mandate to do so,
yeah,
they've allowed the collection of that data to be, you know, at your disposure. So yeah. There's a law. You should do this, but yeah, if you don't, it's okay.
Yeah,
and nobody does.
It reminds me of that chart I made last year.
It's so fitting. I
see the protection chart.
That's apropos and too many instances.
Yeah, I'll post that link to it on the show.
Well, notes, so it's but. It's a left an axis, and on the one side is how much protection you deserve, and on the other axis is who you are. Right. And so let's read from the most deserving of protection. Who's at the top of that list?
Police officers, of
white
course.
Male police officers.
They're always in danger, despite being armed.
Okay, so. And then next.
NFL players.
Okay, and this was, in fact, this still reigns true, Greg sure Hardy, but this was written because of...
Ray Rice. Yeah. They must not be provoked.
What did you say that made him punch you in the face like that and knock you out cold?
Number three, we have white people in Walmart. Requires shoot first, ask questions later protection.
Yeah.
Must. Yeah.
John Crawford.
Coming in strong at number four is dogs, quite frankly.
They stay loving.
They stay in dogs. The pocket.
And you know this animal abuse registry? It's mm-hmm. a dog abuse registry.
Because uh-huh.
if it was like abusing cats, rats and lab animals nope. and shit, no. fuck you cares. It's dogs. Dude. It's dogs.
And maybe cats, but for sure dogs.
Definitely dogs.
Coming in third from the bottom is peaceful protesters.
Sure, tear gas.
Just saw five MRAP of them tanks. Shot by white supremacists in Minneapolis.
Yep.
Charged, one of them charged with assault. The other, just some sort of misdemeanor.
Yeah, peaceful protesters are not deserving of state protection. Mm-mm. In fact, when they did get shot, I believe the refrain was, what did you expect?
You deserved it.
Yeah. Yeah. So now that you do not deserve protection, you deserve to be shot.
Coming in next, unarmed black teenagers.
We stay killing black kids.
Five black youth were killed in Brazil on the 28th of November. 111 shots were fired by the Rio de Janeiro.
111 shots
into their car.
That's an assassination. Fuck me.
Just to give some clarity there. The youngest was 16 years old.
I didn't hear about that at all. Good Lord. And lamentably, who's at the bottom of the list?
Black women.
Black women
who nothing to see here. It's all her fault.
And I would just say exhibit A, Daniel Holzclaw.
Yeah.
You know, and I've had a few different conversations with people. We haven't talked about it here. I think you said you were stunned that he was found guilty.
Yeah. I still am. And you know, he was found guilty of some things.
Yeah. I tweeted that it's important to note that the not guilty say just as much about him and the crime and the system as the guilties do. And I think really it's not telling. It's what we've seen is that the only way, if there's going to be even a modicum of a hope and a prayer for some sort of, consequences for a cop's illegal behavior, you got to have fucking tape. You got to have GPS. You got to have DNA. You know, like I don't know if you did the exact analysis, but I would be almost certain the convictions, the guilty verdicts that Holzclaw got were only for women in which the GPS monitoring, his car and other things had, you know, there were like concrete hard evidence, meaning the women that had the exact same story, exact same circumstances, but were black and in perhaps prostitution or drug abusers, they were not believed at all. Their cases
were not credible.
Non-convictions.
Correct.
And so it's like, even when you're like, on the one hand, like, well, he clearly is guilty of all this other shit. You couldn't have even just like, I think including the other victims would have been too much for those jurors to say, like, well, now anyone can make an accusation against police and the police can get found guilty.
Well, it's funny you mentioned
that. Like, we got to protect the cops.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that because I am not even close to done with this Hulse Claw business. I'm working on some things right now.
I didn't doubt it.
With any other black women that he arrested in his time on the Oklahoma City Police Department.
Oh, yeah. You know what? So that should be standard procedure. When one of these cops goes dirty like that, it's like, fuck. And I'm sure if there were white people he had been arresting, their lawyers would be like, throw it out.
Yeah. So anyways, you'll be hearing more about that. I've got a bunch of people doing some research for us. Me and William and the Black Signal crew were on it. Some lighter news, or not really lighter, but different. A father and son stole $41,000 worth of chicken wings from a restaurant.
How do you do that?
This is from New York. This is from New York.
That's a lot of fucking chicken wings.
Authorities said a father and son stole about $40,000 worth of chicken wings from a New York restaurant where they worked and sold them on the street or to other businesses. The Onondaga County Sheriff's Office said 56-year-old Paul Rojek and 33-year-old Joshua Rojek, both of, you guessed it, Syracuse, New York, were caught stealing wings from the Twin Trees 2 restaurant in Syracuse. Deputies said both men were employed as cooks when they placed numerous chicken wing orders with the restaurant's wholesaler. Officials said the Rojeks would later pick up the orders and resell them at a reduced price. The men billed about $41,000 worth of wings to the restaurant's account between last February and November 21st when they were caught. Both have been charged with grand larceny and falsifying business records. It wasn't immediately clear if either man had an attorney who would comment on the allegations.
I mean, that's about $4,000 a month,
yeah,
right? If they're doing it consistently.
Yeah.
I don't know what restaurateur would not notice $4,000. Like, in order for $4,000 to just be like a blip in the food cost, you'd have to be doing $500,000 worth of food.
Well, two things. One, that's assuming they were paying this purveyor.
Oh, they could have been doing it in the business owner's name.
In the business owner's name. And it had just been dragging it out.
You're right about that.
And if they were paying for their regular bills, they wouldn't have been a red flag to the purveyor because their books would have been like, okay, well, they owe us some, but they've also paid us $700,000 this year.
And they could have even, if they were really smart, they could have paid the bill on themselves on occasion, right? Like, put some of the money back on it.
It depends on, I mean, I don't know if the holiday ended up being like more or what the hell. How, I don't know if it was every week kind of thing, but anyways, I just thought that was interesting.
And like, how do you like... Like, I know there's like an entire world I know nothing about, you know, when it comes to like stolen chicken goods and fence goods and chicken. I know a fair amount about chicken, but like, I just like, again, like I've known people that are like, hey, I got something, like, you know, you interested in this, like I'm selling this, like, oh, I need this kind of electronic thing. Like, there's a dude I know I could go see to get that. Where in the fuck do you sell chicken wings? Like, do you come out like, hey, I got some wings.
No, man, you just have food trucks. That's a huge place you can sell chicken wings to.
And what, you just be honest? Like, listen, I stole them and I'm going to give them to you cheap?
No, just be like, I'm the kitchen manager at this restaurant. We have some chicken wings. You want to buy them? Buy them. I mean, food trucks buy from restaurants all the time. It's not an uncommon thing.
Okay.
And if you had, like, you know, any, like, a special occasion, if you had churches would buy it, trust. You could I'll sell some chicken wings right fucking now on this block if I needed to.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to pull
chicken wings
up,
will go.
There was an article I read about maybe a year ago that the popularity of the chicken wing has outpaced the number of chickens. So the chicken wing's invention was, like, to use parts
that nobody wanted.
Yeah, yeah.
And now it's like, we want our wings.
Yeah, yeah. And now they've got, you know, chicken manufacturers, Purdue and other folks, growing chickens, like, selected for their ginormous wings and shit. And so now wings are getting more
expensive.
Do
you like the drum or the flat?
I like the drum a little bit better.
I love the flat, so it's funny.
Yeah.
There's not enough meat there.
I'm a fan. Speaking of poultry and fowl, I'm just going to let this speak for itself. Oh, it's going to turn out.
Are those turkeys?
Yeah. It's a mailman walking, being chased by five.
Turkeys are mean, man.
Wild turkeys.
Every day.
That's him.
Somebody goes, what is this? And he goes, every day. He's got a big pole. 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, 5 of them. And he's just getting chased by wild turkeys.
Poor thing. Wild turkeys are mean. We had them by our old house, and they were fucking nasty.
And this thing's pecking the tire of the van now.
Oh, my God.
And, like, why the mailman? It's always the mailman. Like,
animals hate the mailman. Our dogs hate our mailman.
Our dogs will allow, like...
a mail person.
Any other fucking thing to happen around our house.
Yeah.
But as soon as Roxy comes up to the door, they go babe shit.
They don't even go that crazy for the the UPS guy.
I know.
It's just
and the UPS guy walks into the back.
I know.
The UPS guy goes all the way into the back and drops shit off in like the on our porch. And then even fucking do shit.
But it's crazy.
Roxy comes up and they bark, 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 bark. That reminded me of the NPR story about the turkey that they had to kill. That was like someone's family pet, but it wasn't because it was wild and it was attacking people. These turkeys on these streets they're out of pocket. Out of pocket. But where are we here?
White people, I get bullied in school. I can't wait till I'm a cop so I can bully you. White people. Hey, 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 hey.
So this week, white people, I'm just going to use the hashtag, stay mad, Abby.
Stay mad, bitch.
And I fucking love Black Twitter. Mm. And when Black Twitter do shit like stay mad, Abby, and various hashtags, they're just fantastic. But if you're not in the know, Abby was a individual that sued, went to the Supreme Court for a affirmative action because she didn't get into University of Texas. Poor Abby Fisher. And the really worst part was Scalia's comments, response was, this article in the Huffington Post called it troubling. I'd call it openly racist, more than troubling. He basically said that Abby's argument was valid because black people should be they can't keep up. University of Texas is really good school.
Y'all, we dumb.
And black people should go to a more, mediocre school so that they feel good about the work that they do. And all kinds of shit came out. And again, I'm not trying to be all like classism, this, that. But like, I can't remember where, but someone tweeted her SATs were like, they were like 11 something.
1160.
And again, there's probably lots of people that didn't do even that well. I'm not trying to be like a dick or nothing. But like, in my opinion, 1160 is not a number to be like going to the Supreme Court about like. And she was all like, these black people took my place. Or they're only like 5% of the class is black. These like 67 other, these 8 black people took your place, not the 64 other people that are white that got in and you didn't, that had worse scores. What about that, Abby? The fuck?
Yeah.
Abby. I went to high school with people that had a perfect score on that test. And she's like, I didn't get into University of Texas. But yeah, stay mad Abby as a hashtag was fucking brilliant.
Yeah, so all, especially black women, were just posting all of their badass graduation pictures and just like, oh, you mad, Abigail? Okay, now I'm finished.
Stay mad,
Abby. So that was really awesome to see and very cool because we like that. And
they're not going to decide on that shit until June.
They decided already, I'm pretty sure.
No, this is just the oral arguments, yo.
Oh, I thought that they did decide. Nah.
They fucking the Supreme Court. They fucking sit up there and fucking bloviate for months on this horse shit. But that was the release of Scalia's oral arguments.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking black people feel better if they're in stupider schools. And the Huffington Post, that is not troubling. That's not troubling. That's openly racist. Supreme Court. Lifetime appointment. Scalia. Troubling.
Troubling my ass.
So I guess it's going to be an apology, but where's my music?
I'm sorry, so sorry, so sorry, that I was such a fool.
And I say, I guess it's an apology because on our show notes, it's like this week in apologies. And, there's like, is it an apology? Is it not?
We will eventually give it a grade.
We will give it a score. But this one, the article, the lead, State Senator Nolenberg responds to outrage over comments perceived as racist.
Yeah, so, like, perceived as racist.
Even in the lead, they can't say the word apology.
Tonight, Republican State Senator Marty Nolenberg of Troy is responding to the outrage over what he said during an education committee meeting.
7 Action News reporter Kim Russell spoke exclusively to him and joins us tonight from the newsroom. And Kim, this is kind of a hard one to explain away.
There is no question, and everyone is weighing in.
From kind the American of a hard
Federation
one.
Of Teachers to fellow
play,
legislators
play that guy again.
To the governor's
that
office.
Wait a minute. Now, I want that soundbite.
I know.
Kind
I
of
know.
A hard one to explain away. Back to you, Amy.
7 Action News reporter Kim Russell spoke exclusively to him and joins us tonight from the newsroom. And Kim, this is kind of a hard one to explain away.
There is no question, and everyone is weighing in. From the American Federation of Teachers to fellow legislators
Yo.
To the governor's office. And now, Senator Nolenberg himself.
If they knew me, they would know that I'm not racist at all.
Pause. Can we just... he starts.
No, we should have the bingo card out bingo right now, dude.
If you knew me, I'm not racist.
Before he continues, I haven't even heard this. Before he continues, what else does he have to hit? I have a black friend, employee, whatever, right?
It's out of context.
Out of context. You heard it. Yeah. Out of context.
I'm the victim. I'm under attack.
Under attack, victim.
You got one of my employees is black?
I got that one. I know a black person.
I did some other thing that was good for black people this one time.
Sorry if whoever was offended.
Yeah, sorry if you were offended. I'm not a racist. I didn't mean it that way. One of my friends is black. I'm sorry if you thought it was racist. That'll be a bingo.
Okay, here we go.
I think he's halfway there.
He's already got one. We got the I'm not a racist. If you knew him, he's a
Senator
good guy.
Marty Nolenberg from Troy is defending himself after comments he made during an education committee meeting in Lansing.
He looks like a racist.
And you mentioned why these schools
these
fail. You mentioned the economically disadvantaged and the non-white population. Are contributors to that.
Right. Pause it. And did he just double down? He just basically said his comment
No.
Again.
This is the comment. That's why I just said. They're playing his comment.
I was like, is this his apology?
You can't fix that. We can't make an African-American white. That's just, it is what it is.
His words came as he talked with representatives from the Department of Education and the governor's office about failing school districts all over the state.
It's clear that you may have some built-in racism,
the state
but
rep,
it's also
Brian Banks
clear
from
that
Detroit.
You are out of touch of reality. So as
with
a fresh elected
to death,
official,
purple
as
plaid
one of your
jacket
colleagues,
on.
You owe us an apology.
It's scary to think an elected official
David
thinks
Hecker,
that.
We wanted to hear
American
what Senator
Federation
Nolenberg had to say for himself. We tracked him down at his insurance office in Troy.
Insurance
he said
office?
He didn't know what he could have possibly said that could have caused outrage. So we played the clip.
Do you
okay. He didn't know. Okay.
See how some people would take that offensively to say you can't make an African-American white?
And I suppose if they want to, spin words around, I suppose they could do it that way. But if you read further into my questioning... I don't think you would interpret it that way.
Senator Nolenberg's
out of context.
That's to
check.
That's to put it in context. He had just read statistics that said most kids in struggling districts are of color.
I think what some people would say and what they interpreted from this is that
she really determined to get this apology though. I'm gonna give
she
it
try.
To her. Abby, you really trying. Good for you doing your job.
Is Abby
Kim,
or Kim?
Oh, Kim. Sorry, Kim. Go ahead. Kim.
You missed what is contributing to the problem. By saying that you can't fix that people are black, you can't make them white, that race isn't really the problem. What would you say to that?
Race is not the problem.
So you agree?
I agree. Race is not the problem at all.
I don't think it'd be better
no.
if black people could no. be made white. That's not what you were saying.
No, not at all. I have an African-American employee with that.
Number three, because
I knew it was going to be an employee.
Number
I knew it wasn't going to be
three.
A friend. I knew it was an employee.
Purr, purr, purr. Okay.
She took the rest of the day off.
She wasn't even there.
That is the black. That's his black employee getting the day off. Is that
she
a
didn't even get to be
Personal
so we're supposed to believe him then,
PTOB? Personal day off of
black person you claim works in your office.
They're not here today.
Senator Nolenberg.
I'm very magnanimous. I gave them the day off. Please.
She's not here today.
I didn't want her to experience this.
Okay, we got to keep going. This is fucking hilarious.
Guys, to the people who are offended.
I can apologize to those that felt that way.
Oh! Snap!
Oh!
Is that 4 for 4?
That is 4 for 4.
What's needed for bingo?
Bingo was, he's under attack, and he kind of said that. He says, if you want to twist words, if they want to twist
or
words.
Or he got the free space.
Yeah. Or he got the free space, yeah.
Now, since he was speaking to the governor's advisors when he made these comments, I reached out to the governor's office to get some context. The governor's deputy press secretary, David Murray, tells me there was no suggestion made that the students' academic performance was caused by their economic status or race or ethnicity. Baker specifically commented that all children are capable of high academic performance in a high-performing school. Now, if you want to see the whole meeting for yourself, you'll be able to find it at WXYZ.
Newsweek.com.
Oh, and you know, I got to give him a little bit of credit for that he snuck in there. Well, I can apologize to those that were offended. Not that I will.
Not that he would.
Not that I am.
Yeah, I can.
Not
do that.
That I do. Not that I actually, right here, I'm saying apology to you. I can.
Well, what's zero to ten?
You know what, though? Here's the thing.
What?
It's totally a zero, yeah. But on pure entertainment factor, I'm like inclined.
Give it a one?
Yeah, just, I don't want to like sully the rankings, but that's a zero.
That's a zero.
But for entertainment.
High entertainment.
High entertainment value.
Low apology.
Well, and the entertainment value was inherent in its predictability.
Yeah, just ridiculous.
And like literally, I hadn't listened to it at all.
Me neither.
Didn't need to.
We did either. Shout out to Julie Taylor. She sent that over to us.
I joked about the phrase, Satan Nolenberg responds to outrage over comments perceived racist. And that's absolutely factual and accurate.
Yeah.
Because none of that was an apology.
He just responded to it.
Yeah.
He didn't apologize.
He didn't respond well.
Nope. No.
You put that in there, a little parenthetical.
Yeah.
Senator Nolenberg responds poorly to outrage over comments. Oh, Michigan. And was it Ron that said something? Like, it's now Florida and Michigan?
Yeah,
like,
he says every time he does the fucking with black people, it's always fucking Michigan all
God
the time now.
Damn, we're fucking Michigan. What are we, where are we moved to?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Michigan.
It's a GOP clown car.
We miss you, girls. I'll just pull this up. Hopefully there won't be an ad. Oh, fuck. Oh, there's a guy.
Why do so many people choose
Aleve? Fuck you, Ed.
It's the brand more Aleve doctors recommend for minor
Is there anyone on stage? Is there anyone on stage? Well, the rules for tonight shrink government. 30 seconds. Well, the rules for tonight shrink government. Without further ado, let's begin.
In Florida, they call me Jeb. I'm proud of my brother.
You are a criminal.
I've got a record in Florida. We've done it 27 times since World War II.
But he says you do nothing.
True, but I have said that Mr. Trump's earned legal status really mirrored what we said is ridiculous, tragic. I believe we can do this the right way and with low expectations, dumb down everything. They call me Vito Corleone.
What?
Education. The Bloomberg Foundation of Border Enforcement means you pay a fine. I've written a book about this over an extended period of time.
Murders, crime, I've been challenged, and I don't have time. The person that wins, if it's not me, have a good time as the Republican nominee. What am I saying? I'm leading by a bit. But you know what? We will win. Drugs pouring across the border, it's fun, and we need brain. Trump, Trump, Trump.
Governor Scott Walker.
Thanks. I'm a guy with a Harley. The voters in Wisconsin, they tried to recall me. You know, people like Hillary Clinton. And lead from behind. You find mush, push. At least in my life, I ran and messed up law enforcement. One article called me aggressively normal. Well, first off, let's repeal Obamacare. I asked for your vote because I was worried for America.
Fat pigs, dogs, slobs,
illegals,
disgusting animals,
prostitutes, drug dealers, pimps, all the people freeloading off the system. And of course, I'm talking about Hillary Clinton.
We'll leave it there.
Yeah.
That was a mashup from the first Republican national debate. The senior table, not the kiddie table.
Half the people ain't on that table.
I know,
no more.
A lot of Huckabee's
Rand Paul, gone. Rand Paul's out of the race completely. He shuddered.
But
Huckabee's been kicked out the table.
I don't know how we missed it, but that was the GOP primetime rap battle. Eminem Slim Shady.
Yeah.
Is that tomorrow they're doing the next one?
This,
I think it is Tuesday. Yes,
two,
tomorrow.
Two Canadians told us that. So
I just
shout out to Clove and Shirley.
I'm gonna say I don't care about the debate, but
not, I don't care about the Republican debate. They're not talking to me, so
yeah,
I don't know why I would care to listen to it.
It's irrelevant.
Let me guess. They hate Mexicans. They hate black people. They hate gay people. They hate women. Vote for them.
Exactly. So I'll just remind folks, if you didn't see this, I'll just give you
a
clicker.
And they really hate Muslims.
A lot safer that knowing that Mr. Trump will be our president.
As far as the truth goes, we've got people in positions of power who I know for a fact are liars. Liars. I watch the TV. My president comes on the TV and he lies to me. I know he's lying. He lies all the time.
Look, friend.
I don't believe any one of them, not one. I believe Donald.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I'm telling you, he says what I'm thinking.
Exactly.
Never been involved in politics, never had an interest in any of it. Now suddenly, he is resonating. He is resonating with the people, and he's speaking our minds. Our minds. Mm-hmm. When the pundits and the experts and all the people who are supposed to be in the know and know all this stuff, and they're so great, I know some of them, maybe not all, But some of them are lying to me straight to my face. Whew. And I am so sick of it.
So that was Susan DeLimas, DeMulis, I think is actually the correct spelling of her last name. And you know, now that I'm listening to this again, I thought she said she was never involved in politics. She was referencing Trump, that he was never involved in politics.
Oh.
But she nevertheless, this is, was presented on CNN as one of their, like, you know, real politicians, real voters, real choices. She's like a fucking, like, Tea Party, like, birther, like, an elected official out of New Hampshire for a GOP Tea Party enclave and is literally, like, queen of the birthers. How in the fuck is that, like, real supporters, real voters, real choices? That's literally, like, a PR person for Trump on this panel. I think that's strange that CNN – not strange, but that's what CNN presents.
CNN sucks.
Yeah, fuck CNN.
Long story short. So I ran across this thing. I actually haven't even, like, played any of it, but this double agent dude, he trolled Trump at the Frank Lutz focus group. A former Romney staffer lied his way into a Trump focus group to see for himself what was actually behind the mogul's rise in the polls and maybe to have a little fun mocking them. He left terrified and sure that the GOP would again fail to take the White House. Whew, how do you troll America's biggest troll? The question is, right? How do you do that?
Yeah. How did he do it?
How did he? So Michael Willey, a former Romney staffer, the opportunity came, he saw an ad on Facebook to get involved with the pollster, and so he lied and listed his first choice of Republican nomination as Trump out of morbid curiosity and desire to be mischievous. And they were going to pay him $100. So I was there supporting Trump, but trolling everyone at the same time. I needed to see for sure exactly what the people of our party were thinking about Trump. Now I'm totally convinced there's no way we're going to win the presidential race. Trump supporters are delusional. They're so pissed off at the establishment. They want to send a message no matter what. 3-hour focus group featured Sunday morning on CBS's Face the Nation and on other various news outlets took place last week in Alexandria, Virginia, just outside of D.C. Once inside the room with Trump's biggest fans, Willie couldn't keep the charade going very long. On the first question on Trump's proposal to ban Muslims for entering the country, he can be seen vigorously shaking his head. He spent much of the hour, much of the next few hours denouncing Trump's ideas and challenging the other Trump supporters in the focus group. He argued against the Muslim ban, citing the creation of America on a desire to flee religious persecution. He defended the disabled reporter that Trump made fun of. He pushed back against the claim that thousands of Muslims cheered at the 9/11 attacks. Luntz said that while the self-proclaiming interloper was annoying, Willie wasn't necessarily out of place. He was agitating the group the entire time. He had 28 people who felt one way, but he felt completely differently because his motives were different. Every time he would speak, the whole group would erupt against him. Luntz told those.
That's in a focus group. They're just on their own. Trump supporter acolytes in a fucking focus group. His rhetoric is so ingrained that they're just going to shout people down.
Mm-hmm.
I tweeted this the other day that imagine, remember when Bush W was in office, the whole like disagreeing with the president is un-American right now.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if Trump's in office. You know?
Yeah. So he says in a strange way, he now wants Trump to win the nomination, but only so that the businessman can lose by a landslide in the general election and make an enduring point to the members of the Republican Party. Quote, I want him to get the nomination to get completely destroyed in the general. The older generation of my party needs to understand we can't have this pro-war, anti-immigrant nonsense anymore. We need to lose this election in order to ever win again. He needs to get destroyed in order for us to understand the path forward. Hillary is probably going to be the next president, and I don't like that at all. He considers himself a libertarian and has worked at the conservative think tank, the Heritage Foundation. Those people are evil. And he worked on Romney's campaign in Ohio. We haven't learned the lesson from that election. We've gone the exact opposite direction. We're never going to win again unless we trend toward more libertarian. He's totally right about that.
Yeah, he is. And it reminds me of in Argentina, our friend used to say kind of the same thing, that the what we call the Falklands War, or the UK calls the Falklands War, and they call the Maldives
Guerra,
that they lost it in such just humiliating and just demoralizing fashion that the next possible election is like, no, we're just done with fascists forever. Like, that just, you just, whatever you just did in the Maldives was so bad, that party's never going to be in office again. And this is kind of what he's hoping for.
Here's a little bit of the focus group.
All Muslims?
Some. Trump,
we have no way of knowing.
All Muslims.
Temporarily, we have no way of knowing who they are. Yes, we need a temporary halt. That's a very reasonable position.
We're legitimately afraid.
And
the president is not making us feel safer.
Yeah, he wants to yell at us about, like, gun control.
I think we're all scared. I'm actually a little jumpy, I find. And Trump is the only one who would come out and say something like this. Yes. No one else would do
and
it.
So you credit him with that.
I do. Mm-hmm. I mean, no one else would say it. Who would say it?
So you don't
it's
see
crazy.
Even in this
and
room
racist.
This explosion of points of view that maybe he went too far in what he said?
Well, you know what Trump does? He says something completely crazy and inflammatory, and I'm like, oh, my God. Mm-hmm. And then he dials back and sort of starts explaining it and saying how he would do.
Creates the conversation.
You see them just nodding their heads.
Trump is smart like a fox. He's in campaign mode. He has to be proactive. He's intentionally playing the media. He's saying things that are right on the edge. He's exaggerating. He's saying things that he knows the mainstream media will grab and throw a gasoline on, and it goes really big.
Believing everything he said.
Right.
We're taking it for exactly what he just explained.
Pause.
He goes out and he makes a
pause. So they're literally they're not only like okay and comfortable with fucking like outright like truthism and fucking, you know, exaggeration and hyperbola that just totally isn't true, but then he dials it back and that's okay. They're totally they're commanding
they're okay
him
with
that.
Him just lying. That's their goal.
They're not just okay with that. They're like, oh yeah, that's great. He does that. Nobody else would do that. That's
great. Everyone's attention to get his issues addressed. We want someone to take a stance. We want someone to say, yes, okay, here's what we're going to do.
Well, I want to punch this chick in the face.
Is it his persona, his tenacity, his raising of issues you care about?
His personality is just so large. I mean, he's out there. He's getting everyone to talk about stuff, just like the lady back here said.
He is entertaining. He's giving everyone something to talk about.
He looks presidential and he acts.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Oh, my God! No!
He said, and I quote, I would bomb the shit out of ISIS.
If I hear that phrase, he looks presidential, oh, for fuck's sake. This is
when he used the word shit.
Good.
That's presidential?
Yes.
Americans think the country's in crisis. Trump is telling them the country's in crisis, and people flock to a strong leader when they think the country's in crisis.
Not
Trump,
people, you. Don't talk about people. You flock to Trump.
Yeah, I'm attracted to his persona.
Because?
Because of what's happening in the world. International affairs. He stands up there. He gives the image he's not going to put up with any crap.
You're an African-American. Why do you support Trump?
Because he's saying stuff that needs to be said. When it comes to the general election, I think a significant number of African Americans will support Trump because
okay, we're not listening to this anymore. This kid's fucking stupid. He just wanted the $100. Just telling you. His girlfriend, he owed some money to her.
he had to put a fucking
we need a pile of clothes.
Put a payment
get
on
this
something.
Shit out of here. Fucking fuck.
What the fuck was that? Just had to let that go on a little bit longer.
Yes.
The cleansing, the palate.
We needed it.
Really needed to be cleansed.
We needed it bad. Yeah. So, in case you hadn't heard, FLOTUS got bars. First Lady Michelle Obama was on a parody video on I think Funny or Die called Go to College. I'll play a little bit of her.
It was the guy from Saturday
Jay
Night Live.
Jay Farrow is the guy that was with her, so let's see here.
Southside Chicago, we all know we had to do overtime every night to make it tomorrow. And everyone could really make their dream true. Hey, kid, listening in Michigan, that could be you.
But a dream is just a dream unless you go, huh? Einstein put it in time, here's a flowchart. Naturally, it won't happen magically, but you can change fantasy into reality so dramatically. If you want to fight crime, you should go to college. If you want to write rhymes, fill your head with knowledge. If you want to steer a grass, don't go to college. But for everything else, you should go to college.
Yeah, so
nice.
Flotus on the ones and twos. She kicked some fresh rhymes there. It was really cute. I love her. She's so amazing, and we're gonna miss them certainly when they leave office. But the best thing, of course, because Black Twitter is Black Twitter, the hashtag Flotus Bars took over the internet the day that this was released on December 10th, and I pulled out a couple of good ones. You ready?
Yeah.
All right. I don't rap, but I'll try here. Is that the White House or your wife's house?
Nice.
Flotus Bars. Yo, I'm Nancy Reagan with a ray gun. Don't try to start none. Degrees all come from Princeton. Yes. Pretty on fleek. Pretty on fleek. GOP hating because their game is weak.
Nice.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Husband just killed Osama. Our last names are Obama. I don't want no drama. I put that on my mama. Mm-hmm. Because I'm FLOTUS and I'm flawless and I'm the poster girl for all this.
Those are good FLOTUS bars.
Mm-hmm. I was meant to say who all those were from. So the first one was from at Mitchell C. Clark. The second one was from at Eve Ewing or Eve Ewing. The third was from Judas Maximus. And the fourth one was from Trace_Stimulante.
Trace Stimulante.
These next three are from Feminista Jones. She says, you want to rumble with the B? Throw more taxes on your whole family. Mm-hmm. That's a good one. She also put, I recite chapter and verse. The title of this recital is Ladies First.
Ladies First.
This is a really good one. My neck, my back. Keep kids remember crack is whack.
Stop it, my back. I was wondering, that's like starting a, you know, there once was a man from Nantucket. Like, it's like, yeah. My neck, my back. My neck. That's a bit of a limerick.
Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, what was the other one that I thought that was really funny? Oh, you wake up, FLOTUS. Post up, FLOTUS. Riding around in that FLOTUS. Flossing out that FLOTUS.
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 God bless her.
God bless her indeed.
Uh-huh. So this funny thing came out. Each state Googled more than any other state in 2015?
Oh, good. And you know, we've lived in a bunch of states. So
we have. So we can just jump all around.
Okay.
Where do you want to start?
Start with my home state, Illinois.
Illinois. Illinois.
It's Illinois, fucking. Don't ever say Illinois.
Illinois.
You sound like an idiot. It's Illinois.
I know
it's Illinois.
I know the S is silent.
I'm telling the genres.
I live there, too.
We have some international genres. They might not know Illinois. The S is silent.
So they just had one that they specifically, because it's not just what they searched the most. It's what they searched the most compared to everybody else.
I got it.
Okay.
Because there was some universality.
Like weighted. Yeah. So
throw Miley Cyrus out.
Right. So they have to have a way to like, okay, but they search it more than everybody else.
What they mean is what regionally is being searched.
Correct.
Statewide.
So it's over the whole year.
Is it like Dub Airs?
No. It's Super Blood Moon.
Super Blood Moon.
Yeah.
Was it good in Illinois?
I don't know. I wasn't here.
We saw the Super Blood Moon for a minute.
We did. Oh, we did see it. Probably maybe it was really good there. Anyways, that's what they served.
That was number one.
Where you want to go? That's the only one that they had.
I'm not gonna say I'm disappointed, but I thought it would have been more like I would recognize that as like indicative of Illinois. Mm. Super Blood Moon. No. What about California?
California love. They have a lot. Kim Kardashian.
Doesn't surprise me.
Steph Curry.
Oh, of course, Golden State.
Drought.
Yeah.
Water conservation.
Sure.
Love wins.
Love wins.
Yeah, that was when marriage equality was passed. Love wins.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
U.S. housing bubble.
They got fucked pretty hard. California did, I guess.
iPhone 6S.
Okay.
The movie Spy.
Let's go to a different state. What about Utah?
The movie Spectre. I'm going to go through all of them.
Okay.
Ben Affleck Nanny. Leah Remini Scientology. Chili Earthquake. Mark Zuckerberg, Volkswagen scandal. There was a Volkswagen scandal?
Yeah, the recall.
Oh, right. Donald Trump hair and Donald Trump racist. Round out that one.
Okay.
Go ahead. What's next?
Utah.
Utah.
I think it's a good comparison. Pacific West, California's kind of keep it weird. Utah.
Transgender.
That was the one?
Man bun.
Man.
Spotify.
They had to Google Spotify?
Apple TV, Star Wars, The Force Awakens, Avengers, Age of Ultron, Jurassic World, and Ant-Man.
I guess they'd be
Planned
like
Planned Parenthood, followed by Sister Wives. Come on.
You can't make that shit up, dude. Themselves. You can't make
the
that
jokes
shit
just
up.
Write themselves. All right. Followed by Sister Wives.
Okay. How about our home state of Michigan right now?
Michigan. Let's see what's up in Michigan. Okay, Michigan, only two. What is transgender?
Again, with the transgender.
And again, you can't write this. Marriage equality. This is the next one.
Okay.
That's the only two.
And again, if you like the first that set that list from Utah, if you'd given me that list, I might have been able to be like, that sounds like Utah.
Yeah.
Like, I could be like, that's got a lot of Utah.
Where am I going to next?
Let's do
Where
Wyoming.
Where else do we live? Oh, Wyoming? We haven't lived any of these places. Wanna... picked. All right. Mars is the number one.
Why'd you do that?
U.S. Constitution.
Because I am a strict constitutionalist. I will wipe my ass with it before I let you take my guns.
Blake Shelton and Gwen Stefani. That's a plus.
Oh, my
together.
God. Yeah, because they...
Firearm.
Firearm?
Yeah, firearm.
I got to Google firearm right now. What
no,
is firearm?
Like a firearm.
Oh, I thought you meant like your arm was on fire.
No,
like
no, no. Firearm.
Oh, sure. Gun, firearm. Okay.
Playboy.
Okay.
And not to be, just so they could dig a little deeper, AR-15 was the next one. Just so that they got
not,
it, really.
Not transgender, not marriage equality.
AR-15.
But it did start with Mars.
Mars.
Yeah. Okay, but what about Pennsylvania? We've lived in Pennsylvania.
Right, Pennsylvania.
Pennsylducky.
Pennsylvania. Number one, Jon Snow dead. So, spoiler alert, that's from Game of Thrones.
Pennsylvania's top search is from Game of Thrones.
And it's a fucking
Yo,
spoiler.
That is so fucking Philly, dude. Like, if you gave me that list, like, I might have been like, Game of Thrones? I'm thinking that's Pennsylvania.
All right. Pope Francis visit. Makes sense.
Oh, definitely Pennsylvania then.
War on Terror.
Okay.
Dick Van Patten. I think he passed away, and I think he's from Pennsylvania.
Is he? Okay.
Creed, the movie. It makes sense.
Sure, sure.
And now we have a trio of random babies. Here we go. Carrie Underwood baby. Royal baby. Blake Lively baby.
So Pennsylvania baby.
They like the babies.
Some of my babies.
Yeah, they do.
I like that list though. Creed. Okay, there's a lot of like real Philly shit.
Yeah,
dude.
A lot of Philly shit going on.
That's pretty good. Pope visit.
Pope visit. Mm-hmm. Jon Snow dead. Okay.
It's a given number one. It's a goddamn Game of Thrones. What about Jersey next door?
Jersey.
Our home state.
FIFA.
I wonder why that's there.
Probably from that scandal, the bribery stuff. You know New Jersey loves a fucking bribery scandal.
We do. We
it's like their
like
favorite.
Him.
Of course, next, Hillary Clinton email.
Yeah, okay.
Yogi Berra.
Okay, he did die.
He passed away. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Chris Christie. All right.
Yeah, I'm sure it wasn't like Chris Christie bridge closing or something.
No,
like
just
that.
Chris Christie. And Pierre Paul Hand.
Yeah, I contributed that. I googled that shit. But after he blew his hand up, I'm like,
yeah,
how fucking bad
is
it?
He's
how
missing
bad is
like
it?
Three fingers. It's disgusting.
You know, and he did it.
I feel so bad. So
I
stupid.
I do too. He did it on his like, this is the year like you go out and get a new contract, right? This is the last year of his current agreement. Like he's going to free agency. It's like terrible. And like they could franchise him and then release him. They could do all kinds. Like his leverage has been significantly reduced because he hasn't played.
It's been blown up, quite frankly.
Significantly reduced is the right phrase. Blowed
Anyways,
up.
Anyways.
Where else have we lived? Louisiana.
Yeah. Okay, let's go there. They only have two. Very interesting. Number one, Ashley Madison hack.
I don't know why that cracks me up. That's really number one.
And number two, Bluebell recall. That's all they care about. Sex
ice
and ice cream.
Sex and ice
cream. Yeah.
Well, Bluebell's big in the South. So that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Ashley Madison.
If I lived in Indiana. They only have two there. Oh. Religious Freedom Restoration Act.
Wow.
And Jared Fogle.
Oh, of course.
Tough one.
There's more than corn in Indiana.
Where else? New York, I guess. I lived in New York, so we'll go there.
Yeah.
That'll be the last one we do. Oh, they have a long list. Greece. Don't know why. Not the play, but the country. Democratic Socialism.
Mm-hmm.
Omar Sharif.
Okay.
Netanyahu Congress.
Okay.
Julianne Moore. Mr. Robot.
The TV show?
Mm-hmm.
Hiroji would like that.
Angela Merkel.
The German chancellor. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Drake.
Yeah. Hotline Bling.
Martin Shkreli.
That's that
douchebag CEO.
Hey, he's the guy that spent $2 million on the Wu-Tang album.
That's him?
That's the same dude.
No wonder people are backlashing against that shit. We might need to dig into that for the next show. Gigi Hadid. I guess she's a model. Bashar al-Assad. Islamophobia. Charlie Sheen, HIV, jihadism, Jennifer Aniston wedding. Did she get married this year? I must have missed that. American Apparel, Kanye West, Rihanna, and not to be outdone by any other state, hoverboard scooter makes it in the top.
Hoverboard scooter.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I'll just do one more. Ohio, marijuana legalization, Anna Duggar, and Randy Quaid. Random. And North Dakota. North Dakota just has just the one that it searched more than anybody else. NFL draft. Good on
North Dakota?
Who's in? Is anybody in North Dakota? Much. I don't think there's a lot of people in North Dakota.
So Gigi Hadid is a Sports Illustrated model, and she is gorgeous.
Oh, that makes sense.
So I guess Michigan, I'm going to have to add because I Googled her.
You Googled her.
The Googles.
So I also came across this thing. It's 15 facts about the class of 2019 that will hurt your soul. They started high school this year.
2019. So these are people that are 13, 14 years
they
old?
They just started high school this
and
year.
And these can be all things like they've never known not Facebook.
Well, first off, just to mess you up completely, they were born in 2001.
Bleh. You know, every time I see that, like, you must be at least this old to, like, buy
alcohol
and
tobacco.
They weren't
even a fetus in the 1990s.
They were born in 2001. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. That's like our goddaughter, yo. Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
They have never owned a CD.
Yeah, that's, I knew it was going to be shit like that. Mm-hmm. Nor should they. CDs are whack.
Yeah.
Go to mini disc.
Yeah. one of the biggest hits of all time, Bootylicious by Destiny's Child. Yeah, most of the kids who graduated in 2019 never even knew Beyonce was once part of a group.
They just know her as Beyonce.
Yep.
It's like Diana Ross in the Supremes. Wait, she was in the Supremes? Wait a minute.
Wait a minute. The class of 2019 probably used cell phones more than any other device to connect to the internet. When they were born, no one used the internet on their cell phones because it cost a gazillion dollars and took all day to type in one word. Instead, you hurried home to the gigantic desktop and dialed up AOL.
Yeah. Dude, guys out there, remember porn fucking coming down like pixel by pixel? Like the image would be like a dot match, like here it comes, here it comes.
Yep, they have no clue what a floppy disk is.
In fact, in 2001, I bought a laptop that didn't have a floppy disk in it, and I was like, what am I going
to
do?
What am I supposed to do with my disk?
With all these disks?
They also don't have any clue about the awkwardness of running into your crush at Blockbuster Video on a Friday night. No idea.
What's Blockbuster Video?
They will never know a world with SpongeBob, Family Guy, or South Park, because these popular cartoons have been around for that long. Hashtags. They will not only understand the hashtag, they will not understand that a hashtag actually meant something else entirely.
I saw one of those with kids that were looking at an old school phone, yeah. And they're like, why does it have a hashtag on it? Exactly. On a phone, that's weird. Mm-hmm. It's a pound sign, kid.
Yep. They just think Victoria Beckham is a stunning fashion designer with a gorgeous soccer-playing husband and a bunch of kids.
It doesn't bother my soul.
No idea that she was Posh Spice at all.
I like her second career much better.
Mm-hmm.
And that by second career, I mean just standing around looking good.
Yep. They have no idea that you once actually had to make phone calls and that texting wasn't something that you just did.
Remember how many phone numbers you'd have memorized?
Yep. So many. And the last one's kind of a sad one, but you probably remember where you were on September 11th, 2001, and alter the New York skyline indelibly, and this class will never know what it looked like before that.
Yeah, that is one of those, like, I remember where I was. People, I would say generational has each, not each, but certain generations have those moments.
Sure. Pearl Harbor, JFK.
I was going to say JFK, sure. And Pearl Harbor are probably the two pre-24 that, yeah, would have been as big. Mm-hmm. So I guess this is just general news, but I came across an article. I ate white people's collard greens, and it tasted like oppression.
Sounds about right.
Last Friday, the family and I went out to the town to eat and decided to try a local restaurant. It's time we do as Marylanders do, something like that. So I chose a restaurant touted for its farm fresh offerings. Read hipster. The menu looked like something I could roll with. When we arrived, I saw the southern fried chicken with collard greens and mashed potatoes. Yes, collard greens. And then the other says they were utter wasteland of whiteness. First, let me tell you how I came to the trash decision of eating them. I came to myself from the South without being exactly Southern. We've hashed out disdain for peach cobbler and other typically Southern foods before. Still, I'm not completely lost. I was initially suspicious about these so-called collard greens, even though I'm not possessive of sweet tea. I need my fried chicken on point, my collard greens seasoned for the Lord. Mashed potatoes, creamy little lump. So let me just see here. Let me be real. Normally, even the consolation prize of mashed potatoes and chicken couldn't sell me on the idea of eating collard greens from a non-soul food restaurant. I would have voted Nowell completely if not for one thing, ham hocks. Oh, ham hocks, those fatty, fatting hunks. This is a whole review, but she just says it tastes like oppression. Where's the part about oppression?
I don't know why you're saying this, aren't you? So it doesn't say that it's...
Harriet Tubman ain't free, didn't free us so I could feel this oppressed in 2015 by soulless veggies on a plate.
She says that the collard greens were blander than a cup of room temperature tap water. No spice, no peppers, no garlic.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I am one of those white people that grew up... My mother, God bless her, just seasoning wasn't a thing. Like, she had seasonings that were given to her as a wedding gift, like, up until last year. I'm like, you know, I know that you're not using marjoram and these other things, but there's a shelf life and it's not 25 years.
Yeah.
Whatever this, like, you know, McCormick's seasonings spice rack from forever and ever and ever and ever again.
There's definitely.
And she, her modus operandi of cooking is to just cook it to death.
To death.
You know, grill it to death. And like, once you cook it so far, it's like, even if you had seasoned it.
It's not seasoned
anymore. Now the season is charred.
It's like water down grossness. So we saw a couple movies this past week. We went to the movies and we saw the...
As we said, Johners, we've got this new upgrade in our theater with these fucking pimped-ass Lazy Boy seats. So we're like, fuck it. Let's go to the movies.
So we went to see JLG, my boyfriend, Joe Gordon-Levitt, or JGL, sorry, and Seth Rogen and Give Daddy a Sandwich in the night before, Anthony Mackie. It was funny. I really enjoyed it.
I thought it was good.
It was cute.
I didn't love it.
I didn't love it, but it was. I laughed.
As a Apatow, you know, it comes out of that like
that
you know,
vein.
Hangover and Pineapple Express and This Is the End. I thought of those, it was their weakest effort.
Yeah. What's their best one?
I think This Is the End is my favorite. Maybe Pineapple Express
is their best one, I think. Pineapple Express is the one that, like, it doesn't matter what scene it goes to. It's funny start to finish. And I can't say that about This Is the End. This Is the End got bigger laughs, but as a whole, like, Pineapple Express, just every fucking scene in that movie.
Well, and I think there's different, like, why is this better, that better? Pineapple Express is hilarious. And I think that the roles are great. And I think that the MacGuffin and the premise is just terrific. Whereas This Is the End is a little bit contrived. It's like the rapture.
And it's them playing themselves.
Yeah.
So there's a satire piece to it that doesn't exist in Pineapple Express. And I also think, like, the Seth Rogen thing wasn't, like, over the top in Pineapple Express.
No, but I thought that this was, like... You know, like
it was like a watered down.
It was like a better version of Dude, Where's My Car?
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like that it was bad because it wasn't say it was bad, but it definitely wasn't like uproarious and hilarious. And there's a couple of like just, you know, like some movies go with like the poop joke and the fucking fart joke and the bodily fluid joke. It's like every time with a penis joke, it's like enough is enough. And I don't think that they're quite in that vein, but they have a level of humor that they go to the well often, like the, you know, where he's in the church and he's saying Jesus fucking Christ, like that.
Make fun of him being Jewish all the time. That's a common trope with them.
But I'm saying they go to that well a lot, and it's like, you know, they keep trying to like, how can you do it bigger and bigger? Like, okay, he's in a church saying Jesus fucking Christ. You know, it's like, all right, is that really not necessary? But you know,
well, I'd give it a B minus.
Yeah, I'd say maybe a C plus, B minus. I liked
for what it was trying to, because to me that's what it pitched itself as. So I give it a B minus because I feel like I went into it. It didn't deliver a C plus worthy of what I expected. So I give it a.
You're B-. Right. I had low expectations, and I would say it was you know, I had like Tracy Morgan's narration and the setup was decent.
It was
enough,
funny. There was funny parts, you know, to it.
It got to a
point. And my boyfriend was in it, so you know, I love watching him.
Yeah, I liked Spotlight though.
Oh, Spotlight was great. We talked about that already though.
Yeah. I thought, okay.
Yeah,
what was the other movie we saw?
Tim's Vermeer.
Oh my God, that shit was fucking...
Which is available on demand right now, I think on HBO or Showtime or something.
That shit kind of blew my mind.
Yeah, so you want to talk about it?
Yeah, it's a documentary, and Vermeer's famous Dutch, like 16th or 17th century master painter. And there's always been some, I guess, I didn't know this till the movie, but discussion about Vermeer's work and whether or not... so that some of his work is astoundingly better than contemporaries of the time, and better in a different kind of way. So they were questioning whether or not it was a work of art like that he painted, or he used some sort of, you know, the assumption is a camera obscura, a form of mirrors and you know, lenses to project an image on another wall and kind of like paint it that way. And there's some evidence to back that up. Like, he doesn't have Vermeer's paintings when X-ray don't have drawings underneath them. They're not like mistakes and fuck ups and tests. Like, you know, Picasso has like some bowl of fruit that he painted and then painted over it, did, you know, Mona Lisa, and you can X-ray it and see the bowl of fruit. He doesn't have that in Vermeer. So it's like, there's some things that maybe, okay, was it mechanically supported his painting? And then there's another question, does that really matter? You know, why do we have to make a discernment between art and mechanics
yeah.
and technique and technology?
Isn't that a technique in and of
yeah,
itself?
Yeah, is that there's negate the artistic, you know, element of it?
And there was a quote, I think, where the one guy, the expert guy, he said, well, you know, this, when I think it was Martin Mull, when he was using it, or one of the other guys that was using the machine, you know, the apparatus,
yeah,
that Tim created. And he said, I found myself rather turned into a machine. I just went into this like mode of just doing it. And he's like, well, maybe that's what Vermeer did. Maybe he turned himself into a machine. Now, the body of work that Vermeer amassed, he clearly was doing it much faster if he was using the same type of device than Tim would. But Tim's not a trained
painter.
And also, that might be the skill that Vermeer had that other people didn't, was the ability to do truly quickly. Do it well.
And not just do it well, but that's, you know, he did it. So painters of that time held their processes very secretive.
Yeah.
You had to like train with other painters and learn what they did.
Like, they didn't let you see their like...
Correct. They'd swear you to secrecy, right, and stuff. They would mix their own pigments and paints that were, again, secret. So it's not unheard of that he was very likewise secretive about his process and wouldn't share with it and would be by himself perhaps in a room, you know what I mean, where you wouldn't be able to say, oh, I saw him do this, that, or the other thing. But so this guy, he's a... what is he, like a 3D graphics dude, owns like a technology company.
Yep.
And you know, does a lot of work with movies and TVs and shit. And he just kept thinking about Vermeer and this book that he read, and he kept thinking and mulling it over. And he had like in a bathtub some aha moment that maybe he did it with a mirror, that there was a mirror involved because they had mirrors at the time. And he gets out of the tub some days later, makes some setup with the mirrors, puts a picture, like an actual photograph down, puts the thing up with the mirror, and in the span of about 8.5 hours, after having never picked up an oil paint in his life, mixed oil paints and painted, like, you know, let's be honest, like a really good fucking painting of his father-in-law, right? Like, yeah, with zero skill. What's like the beginning of the movie is like, well, I'm gonna set out and paint a Vermeer, which is kind of unusual because I'm not a painter. Like, you know, like he's gonna do this crazy thing, but he's not a fucking painter. And so the painting's like evidence of this technique could work, and he shows it to a bunch of people. And then to actually do it, he built like a studio in a warehouse with the same like lighting that Vermeer had, facing the same direction on the earth. He had the same, you know, like he made his own furniture, and he's doing this. He's like got a lathe and he's making fucking furniture. He's like, you know, I'm not interested in woodworking. I'm not doing woodworking as a hobby, but I want to be able to make this painting, so I have to replicate this piece of furniture. What? Like, he spent a year replicating the setting to do this painting, and then sat down for what, 5 months? Literally every day, 8 hours a day for 5 months to paint this thing. And the outcome is unbelievable. It just blows my mind. Blows my mind. It was the coolest documentary I've ever, not ever seen, but it was super dope. And just this dude was like, he's like a bon vivant, like weirdo.
He is.
Like, he's into so many different things. Like,
and he was like, they asked him, like, oh, would you, if we weren't making this movie, would we have quit? And he's like, oh, yeah, I would have given up
months ago.
Yeah. Like, it took him so long to do it. But it was really good. And, I mean, he did paint a Vermeer, and good luck. Good on him.
Yeah, and he did. And he did all this for what? To say that it could be done, and now it hangs over his bed.
Yeah. It was just something he wanted to do.
Yeah. And I think that my takeaway is, given the right amount of patience, you know, there's probably human beings that do a little bit of what that the device he had does. You know, people that do that in their mind, why is that any more valued than somebody that does it with an assistive device?
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, but so like, and I guess the skill is in the mind and the hand and that sort of connection, versus his skill, and he admits this, is literally just brute forcing time. Like, he threw fucking 6 months at it. Just painting. Just fucking painting.
Right.
Like, the one piece of the painting that was closest to his device had the most detail, took him like like 20 days to paint like 4 square inches of this like fucking rug. You know what I mean? And like, I'm not saying that's not a skill, but is that the same skill as actually painting it without this assistive device? I don't know. That's not for me to decide, I guess. Mm-hmm. Reminds me of the, remember when Christo did the gates in Central Park? If anyone's ever out there, there's a documentary about Christo's gates, the big orange gates that were in Central Park. And it ends with a I think a homeless dude who's got like a shopping cart full of stuff. And he's got a very astute statement that's something like, if I take a shit in a box and put it on your lawn, and just because I call it art, does that make it beautiful? And that's how they end the documentary about Christo's gates. I don't know if I would call the gates piles of shit in a box on your front lawn. But
I don't know about that.
Just, whatever we think about what is art, that right. Dude's quote is always
the best.
It's his best. If I took a shit in a box and put it on your lawn
and called it
art, does that make it beautiful? Then they roll the credits. Does that make it beautiful?
Yeah, exactly. On that note, I think that's it for today.
Okay. You know, I didn't do it, but we've got all these different things now from South Park with the
Leslie, you want to do some of them?
Hey, Leslie!
It's dramatic. And I got one more.
Hey, Leslie!
And a shorter one.
Hey, Leslie!
And then,
do you know Leslie?
And I haven't found use for it, but I'm gonna pull out next time somebody refers themselves as classy.
Yeah,
I got some shit for you.
What do you got? Play that one.
My name is Classy with an I and a little dick hanging off the C that bends around and f*** the L out of the ASS. No, it's classy with an I. The little dick that hangs off the C f*** the L out of the ass. Classy.
Because you know people like to self-anoint themselves as...
Sure. You know my theory on that.
Anyone that says they're classy...
Is the Google Doodle about yoga today?
It is.
Weird.
I wonder why. I don't know. World Yoga Day or something?
Wow. Is it Yoga Day? I don't know. I'm going to press it and see what it says. Oh, wait. The guy moves.
Yeah. He's like a doodle. A Google Doodle.
BSK Iyengar, I guess. The founder of the style of yoga known as Iyengar Yoga.
Well, I think that's a real high point.
He's a yoga master.
And the show on that.
High five.